Welcome. You've tuned into Beyond Academia, the LSC-sponsored podcast for adventurous research students. I'm Peter Harrington, and with the help of expert guests, we're going to explore career options, skill sets, and research opportunities you don't typically find on the traditional academic runway. So buckle up, get set for the journey, and let's go places on what I hope will be a thought-provoking ride. If you are only able to listen to one episode within this podcast series, then this is probably the one I'd recommend. Over the course of the next 30 minutes, I talk with Dr. Jenny Brady and Dr. Simon Brown. Simon's been at the heart of a government-funded initiative that specifically supports PhD students who are interested in commercialising their research. Jenny will be discussing how the programme she helps to run in the Northeast are making a significant difference to the lives of researchers. But let's hear from Simon first. A physicist by trade, Simon has also spent many years in academia. He's also an entrepreneur with a passion and strong track record for making a difference to the lives of many young people. I started off by asking Simon about the importance of the work PhD students do.
PhD students are hugely important to researchers, to universities and to UK PLC because they are the bright-eyed, bushy-tailed people that come out of universities. However, the problem that they have is that many of them have arrived at the position of gaining a PhD position, and they've got there because they've won at every academic competition that they've entered. They've done brilliantly at school throughout their careers, and they have focused on their academic discipline to the exclusion pretty much of everything else because they love their discipline. They are seen as, in my mind, the winners in the academic race, and they see themselves as wanting to carry on progressing in their discipline to secure tenured posts, become the research profs of the future.
And is there a problem with that?
Well, the problem is that not every one of them can achieve that. There was some research done by the Royal Society in 2010 and then again in 2016 that looked at the destinations of those PhD students that completed. And the data hasn't improved since 2010, it's, if anything, got worse. About 0.5% of PhD completions will become research profs. 3% maybe become tenured academics. The rest ultimately have to seek their careers outside of academia, in research labs outside of university or in completely different career opportunities. So about 97% of those students who start and then complete a PhD will have to secure their career outside of academia. And the problem that I encountered when I was working with PhD students at a variety of universities has been that they think that they will be that 3% or the 0.5% that will become the research profs. Very few of them, very few, have a plan B for what goes on after the PhD completes. And so what I've been doing since 2011 is working with PhD students, with research academics, to give them the tools and the skills so that they can take control of their future rather than being bounced at the end of a funded program.
So you are plan B solution.
I try and give these amazing people opportunities to explore the future from a position of strength rather than having to react at the end of a funding round finishing. And so what we try and do is try and help people build what we would call an entrepreneurial mindset, take them away from focusing exclusively on their research so that they can see what can be done with their research and who might be interested in their research and where else might their passion find a pathway that gives them a career, not just a job, but a career and a satisfying future. The problem of getting to the PhD students or the postdocs or even the early career researchers is that their research teams are so keen on delivering impact, which is the key area that all universities and individuals are measured against now, is it sometimes felt to be a dilution of effort if you take these amazingly talented people and try and broaden their experience. But what we're showing and what the research has shown and what the activity has shown is that this is far from a dilution of impact on the research group. It actually enhances the research group, because allowing their team members to go out and talk to other researchers, other academics, other industrial potential sponsors or commercial players, they realise the significance of their research in the global context, the wider context. And that information being brought back into the group actually enhances the research of the group rather than dilutes the effort. And so trying to get that message through to research teams that releasing your PhD students, your postdocs, or even your early career researchers to do some activity away from the lab bench, away from the research group, is actually an enhancement rather than a dilution. And that message is slowly coming through.
Now, you've been at the heart and spearheaded a national program known as the iCure, which is government funded, and it supports PhD students and teams. Can you tell us what iCure is?
iCure is now a government funded program that looks to develop not just the early career researcher, the postdoc or the PhD student, but the person or the team that probably owns the intellectual property. And that typically will be around the senior researcher or the PI. And it also involves the university, because the university will have a vested interest in the intellectual property that has come from the research group. So we create a team that has typically a young, but not always young, researcher, their PI, their senior researcher, the university represented by a tech transfer or knowledge transfer professional, and then an external advisor who will give insights into the commercial potential of that research. And we take the teams, we train the teams, we give them some tools and some skills, and we give them some insights into how to explore what potential there might be for their research. And then we fund the early career researcher, the postdoc or the PhD student for 3 months to travel around the world to talk to in excess of 100 people, have over 100 meaningful conversations with non-academics. We're wanting conversations with people who have problems that this research, this intellectual property, has the capacity to solve.
So there's clearly help with networking. You talk about funding. What kind of funding is available?
The salary of the PhD, postdoc, early career researcher is fully funded for 3 months, up to a maximum of £15,000.
Is that a month or over 3 months?
Over 3 months.
Right.
The funding after that is to pay for airplane tickets, hotels, trains, subsistence, and we provide in that 3 months up to £20,000 as expenses to allow that individual to travel anywhere in the world to have those 100 meaningful conversations. And we've had about 300 teams go through to date, and I think only about one or two teams have actually achieved their £20,000 limit. We basically give people more money than they can spend, so there's no reason to stop them going anywhere in the world to talking to anybody in the world who is interested in their research. If at the end of the 3 months, when they come back and they present their journey to a panel of experts, if the expert panel believe that there is some commercial exploitable opportunity, then there is some additional funding that's made available. Another £15,000 for an additional 3 months' salary. And there's also up to £500,000 that's been made available, can be made available by Innovate UK, part of the government's business department, to take that early seed of an opportunity to something that then is investable by external funding, and truly commercial opportunities then accrue. So there's, in the initial iCure program, there is 3 months salary up to 15,000, there's expenses up to 20,000. If at the end of that 3 month journey there is something that is believed to be commercially exploitable, there's up to another 3 months salary for the early career research or the postdoc or the PhD, and there is potential funding from the government to take that seed of a commercial opportunity to a point where it has external potential for exploitation and external investment.
Okay, and you know, clearly that's a lot of money that can really help to make a difference, and a lot of networking opportunities. Does the networking make a difference, Simon?
It's all about networking. It's about taking the research and presenting it globally. And so we talk about having over 100 meaningful conversations. And those conversations are not with other academics. These are people in industry and commerce who have genuine problems for which this research could offer a potential solution. And if, when the team come back and present at the end of the 3 months, if it's not felt that at that point the IP has commercial exploitable potential at that point, those 100 conversations quite often result in companies coming and saying, well, we love your research, but it's a bit early for us or a bit early for the market. We would like to work with you, though, and bring sponsored research. We've had hundreds of millions of pounds of sponsored research into the universities as a result of this program. Or it might be they want to license the intellectual property for a specific purpose. Or it might be that they're told, we love the research, but it's still too early for the market. So you've got research teams who've got genuine feedback from the market. So when they go to the Research England, research funding bodies, the research councils, and say, we'd like more funding for our research, they've got real evidence of the need and the demand for their research. And so we've seen much improved research bids and funding from the research councils. Or it may even be, and this has happened, that these people, when they go and have their conversations, find that there are companies out there around the world who are passionately interested in them as individuals, as well as their research, and they invite them to join them and take on secured employment with them to allow them then to take their research into a commercial future through that organisation. So when we talked about working with young researchers typically who are at transition points in their life, they're coming to an end of a PhD, an end of a funded postdoc, or a position where their future as ECRs are vulnerable, being able to take control of their future and find people who are passionately interested in them as well as their research is a great way for people to find futures that they want to follow rather than being bounced around to look for just a job when the funding comes to an end.
Okay, so IKEA sounds very exciting and very innovative. And certainly, if I was a PhD student, I would want to know from you, okay, so how do I get involved? How do they get involved?
It's interesting. When I was involved in the design at the beginning, I thought, what program would I have liked when I was finishing my PhD? And basically, I designed as best I could a program that I would have loved to have done. It's the way to get involved with IKEA is to just go online and look at the website. There are currently three delivery partners.
What is the website?
You just type into your favourite search engine, probably Google, I-C-U-R-E, IKEA, and you'll be taken to either ikea.co.uk, I think it's that, or you'll go to the Queen's University Belfast website, because they deliver IKEA generally for the north of the country, or you're taken to the Warwick site, because Warwick deliver IKEA in the Midlands, or if you're in the south or you're interested in the south, then Southampton run and support the IKEA program in the south. But if you just type into IKEA, you'll be taken to the government website. That's the big hit, and you'll see how Innovate UK are really passionate supporters of IKEA, because it delivers great outcomes to UK PLC. If you look at the application form, it's not a research funding bid application. It's a simple application form. What research are you doing? What do you think the opportunities are? And basically, are you passionate about this? It's a form I would suggest that you get completed with the senior researcher, the PI, and with support from your university's tech transfer, knowledge transfer team, because you need to have the university behind you. But if you're passionate and there's potential for your research, anybody and everybody can apply. Currently, everybody that applies, you get, the strike rate is about 40 to 50% of those that apply are invited to join the IKEA program.
So that's pretty high. So the chances of getting on the IKEA are far better than the chances of actually getting a job as a tenured academic.
Yes, because tenured academic is a 3% chance. Getting on IKEA is a 45 to 50% chance.
Okay. Now, we've talked a lot about IKEA, and you've talked about the benefits and how to get involved, but there are other options and opportunities out there too. Can you tell us a bit more about that landscape?
The landscape is patchy. There is funding in every university that comes from EPSRC, ESRC, and various other pots, HIFE, but there isn't nationally a similar program to IKEA. It's, as far as I'm aware, the only national. However, because IKEA, since it's been running, has been delivering such amazing outputs for the universities and their research teams, more and more teams are applying, and it's getting harder to get in. So what some universities are doing is they're realizing that to increase their chances of being accepted, they do in-house filtering and support. And so there are programs down in Exeter. Exeter and Bristol work together on programs that I would call a pre-cure type program, where PhD students and postdocs are given not as much resource and support, but support and resource like IKEA to go out and explore their potential and their interest in exploiting their IP. When they come back and share their research, internal teams will then select those that they think are worthy of going on to the IKEA program, or they have other internal mechanisms to support. Manchester have a program that they call Researcher to Innovator, which is a program that is a pre-filter for IKEA. But of course, the scale of a university like Manchester, they have other programs and other support programs that if a piece of research or an academic comes forward and they think, well, they don't need IKEA, they can go straight through our other programs that already are there for developing and supporting and nurturing, they take them on. So this program has been running now for a couple of years, seems to be working really well in Manchester. In the Northeast, the Northern Accelerator has recently adopted a program called Action for Impact that was developed by the Newcastle team, which is doing very similar sort of work. It works with academics, and the way they encourage academics to get involved is to use the impact word to say, come and talk to us about how we can help you identify and then deliver impact.
Simon's endorsement of other programs made me curious, and after a few inquiries about Action for Impact in the Northeast, I caught up with Dr. Jenny Brady, one of the program leaders. I wanted to dig a bit deeper and understand how the program actually worked.
Action for Impact is a researcher development training program which welcomes researchers from four regional universities, Newcastle, Durham, Sunderland and Northumbria universities, who are all partners in and collaborators in the recently established Northern Accelerator program, which is funded by Research England. The program is a residential opportunity to give PhD students and early career researchers an opportunity to step out of the confines of the everyday office or lab environment and immerse themselves in personal and professional development. It's a great chance for them to focus on themselves rather than just their research, whilst considering the progress of their research. We use exciting and unique methods of immersive learning, and there's an additional priority for us to create ways for those researchers to ask themselves not just what are you good at, which they are asked on a daily basis to evidence and justify, but also what are you good for? So what contribution will they make to society? What societal challenges can they provide solutions for? And what positive changes can they action, do something about, and be the catalyst for? Very often researchers begin their research experience full of positive intent and motivation to action positive change. But over time, the research environment sometimes can present challenges such as internal and external pressures to evidence their novel discoveries by publishing papers. There's often the adage of the main priority for researchers is to publish, publish, publish. They are expected to consistently establish their developing reputation in their emerging expertise. They have serious time constraints to consider, and also sometimes are crippled by imposterism, a growing challenge for researchers within academic settings. And all the while aiming to remain in control of their own career planning and management. The programme that we've developed enables each individual researcher to focus on developing their own self-efficacy as part of a supportive network of colleagues and world-class facilitators. We've been doing this since summer 2018, and so far the evidence suggests that what we're doing has been proven to result in a sense of true ownership of those individuals' futures, which ties in with their original motivations when they began the research in the first place. So it's a reintroduction to the original excitement, the original intentions, and a true sense of being part of that research journey rather than a passenger and a passive element to the end result. We're incredibly proud of what we've achieved. It's creating lots of interest, lots of energy around putting the spotlight on research and researchers, those humans behind the activity that make these incredibly important and life-changing actions happen. It's a pleasure to be part of, and I've learned a lot about researchers, research in itself, but also that massive contribution to society and how we all interconnect with one another and the discoveries that we're continuing to make in an academic setting that can then be revealed and shared with society for the benefit of everybody.
So are the programmes endorsed by Simon and Jenny only available to current students? Back to Simon.
I think you'll find that the programmes are open to alumni as well as current students. I don't think any university would turn away an alumni. But in terms of supporting students from other areas or other regions, it might be a challenge. And so that's why I think many universities around the country are looking to create their own support programmes to enable academics within the confines of the university to be supported and nurtured within the small pots of funding that are available, to see if they are prepared, able, ready to benefit from other internal university support, because there's a huge amount of support in every university, but it's how do you filter out the ones that are ready in time-wise, but also skill and competency-wise to take those projects forward, because it's not an obvious skill set that an academic has to transition IP from a lab into a commercial environment. That takes, it's a wonderful journey to be on, but it's not obvious, it's not automatic, and it needs appropriate training and support and nurturing.
Okay, and am I right in thinking that a student will be able to find the relevant information about these courses on those respective university websites?
Sometimes finding information in a university is like searching for a needle in a haystack, because there is so much available and it can be so complicated. So if there is an enterprise centre in your university, go and talk to them. If there is a tech transfer team in the university, find them. If there's a knowledge transfer team, find them and talk to them. If there is an IP expert in the university, there will be somebody who's responsible for intellectual property, talk to them. And they will probably direct you to whatever internal programs and services there are. There's an awful lot of support. It's just knowing where to go to find it. And not every university has the same pathway, pipeline, support, but there will be support there and there will be direction. I mean, Scotland has a wonderful set of programs and support. The Welsh government are trying to do things in Wales. Every region realises that UK PLC desperately needs the intellectual property in our research labs to be brought out and shared with the world. How do we get that done as there's more and more pressure to deliver in so many different ways. If you're a researcher who's doing social science, STEM, whatever, it doesn't matter. We've had some amazing outcomes on iCure from social scientists. We had this amazing young lady who was a ballerina, ex-ballerina, who thought that her training as a ballerina would help people who had mobility problems. She was given an opportunity to travel the world. She is now taking her methods and approaches to dance, to core strength building, to movement, and helping people who have mobility problems around the world. We have policy advisors who have policy approaches. We've got toolkits that they think will help governments deal with serious challenges that they're facing. It's available to everybody and anybody. It's not just science. It's not just technology. It's everybody in university who's doing research. There will be somebody out there who is interested in what you're doing, and you will be solving problems for them, and they will therefore be prepared to give you resource to enable you to solve their problems.
Is there going to be, do you think, continued funding from government departments to support this kind of work?
The government have conducted two rounds of independent evaluation of the iCure program by Ipsos Mori. And whilst I haven't seen the latest feedback and insights from the Ipsos team, the first evaluation showed that for every pound of government money, and I don't know how they do the sums, but between £4 and £7 seems to be returned to the UK PLC. So the government likes that kind of return of investment. We hope that next spring there will be another round of funding for iCure, and hopefully this will be long-term, maybe 5 years, to allow some continuity of the programme to go forward. There is no reason to believe that it will not go forward, which is why I'd encourage everybody that wants to apply to keep applying, because if there's a healthy pipeline of interest, the government will fund it. They will fund because they don't want to turn down the opportunities that have arisen. So funding, I'm sure, will be there. I have no doubt there'll be funding. There'll be programs, multiple programs. Currently, we've been offering 6 programs a year for up to 100 teams, and I'm sure that that will not go down. The funding is there. It's, in terms of government funding, it's small amounts of money for huge amounts of return and benefit. And universities like it because it costs them nothing. It's a risk-free investment from the university. All they have to do is release one of their members of staff who will probably or possibly be unemployed at some point. So they're paid by the government. They're supported by the government for their travel and subsistence. There's no commitment, there's no match funding, there's no commitment expected from the university apart from allowing the person to do the work and to bring that research and that finding back into the research group. So it's a win-win for everybody, I think. The government like it, universities like it, researchers like it, academics at every stage get involved, love it, and keep coming back for more.
Well, that sums up our work on supporting stakeholder organisations. I hope you can make full use of the advice and resources highlighted in this episode, which just leaves me to say a big thank you to our expert contributors, Dr. Simon Brown and Dr. Jenny Brady. My name's Peter Harrington, and you've been listening to Beyond Academia. Go well on your journey, wherever it takes you.